Srila Prabhupada came to fulfill the prediction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made a very, very unique, very unusual prediction, an impossible prediction, that this Krishna consciousness movement would spread in every town and village. This prediction was made 500 years ago, when, what to speak of town and village, people didn't know how many continents were there in this planet. At a time like that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made a prediction that this movement, his mission, would spread in every town and village. It was actually an impossible prediction. How this movement could spread in every town and village. But then, in the recent past, we saw Srila Prabhupada came, Srila Prabhupada went to the West, went to America at the age of 17, practically without any support, without any patronage. He went to America, a 70-year-old man, single-handedly starts a movement, and within 10 years' time, he spreads this movement all over the world. How did it happen? It happened because Srila Prabhupada was empowered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is omnipotent, and he can make anything happen. He can empower anyone. However, he empowers one who is very dear to him. He empowers his devotees who are completely committed to serve him and fulfill his desires. Srila Prabhupada is one such devotee, a pure devotee of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in order to facilitate Prabhupada fulfill his mission, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made a very unique arrangement. That arrangement was, the Second World War took place. The whole world was practically devastated, and it was being rebuilt, restructured. And in that restructuring episode, the United States of America played a very significant role. And as a result of that, the USA reached the height of material success. However, soon after that, when America was in its full glory, America was practically considered to be the most opulent and most powerful nation, we notice that the youth of America faced a crisis. They saw that material prosperity did not offer them what they actually wanted. They wanted happiness, but this material prosperity did not give them happiness. Their homes were broken. Most of the youth were facing an acute identity crisis, the purpose of their existence, the purpose of their life. And on top of everything, there was this Vietnam War. And the Vietnam War was, the youth of America were drawn into this battle, who were actually forcibly sent to fight the battle, for which they did not really have any purpose or any goal. They began to wonder, why are you fighting this battle? Why we are losing our lives far away from home in this distant land of Vietnam? For what? And that caused the youth of America start to search for a positive alternative and a counterculture. And initially the whole counterculture movement actually started with a wrong note. Some so-called thoughtful individuals in the west coast of America started a culture called the flower power culture, a culture of love. But that culture of love actually was the culture of drug and sex. But they thought that that was the positive alternative. They invented a very powerful psychedelic drug called LSD. And the move actually was to get high on LSD and speed. And when and in this way a movement started called the hippie movement. Actually, the hippies didn't consider themselves to be hippies. It was that phrase was coined by others. They used to call themselves freaks. But others called them hippies. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada went to America in mid-60s, exactly in 1965. And then we see that what they were actually aspiring for, what they were actually, the American youth was trying to achieve or trying to get into, Srila Prabhupada came and gave something which was diametrically opposed to their ways. Their culture was based on sex and drugs, and Srila Prabhupada came and said, no illicit sex. Srila Prabhupada came and said, no drugs. What to speak of no drugs? No intoxication. Not even alcohol, not even cigarettes, not even tea or coffee. What to speak of LSD and marijuana and hashish and cocaine. So, and then Srila Prabhupada said, no meat eating and no gambling. I mean, something that Prabhupada came and asked them to follow, which was completely diametrically opposed to what they were standing for. But many youth of America who are sincerely searching for a positive alternative found the purpose of their existence in this mission, in this teachings of Srila Prabhupada. These youth of America were the first soldiers in Srila Prabhupada's army. Many wonderful individuals joined the movement at that time. This American youth, the young American devotees, then went to different parts of the world and started to preach. And one such valiant soldier of Srila Prabhupada's army was His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. Of course, Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was not that run-of-the-mill youth of America. He again was quite different. He was a student in Princeton, one of the Ivy League colleges, one of the best, most prestigious colleges in the United States of America. He was one of the most brilliant students. He was the youth leader, students' union leader, an extremely powerful and extremely brilliant young individual. And he came and joined Srila Prabhupada's movement. When I say that the America was going through this hippie culture or the counterculture, and that doesn't necessarily mean that all those who joined the movement at the time were hippies. No, many of them were, and many others were not, and Bhaktitirtha Maharaj is one of them. There are many such, they were not at all into what the American youth actually stood for at that time. Many of them, like Giriraj Maharaj is one of them, who was very different. He was not at all into that promiscuous life that the American youth were leading. Ravindra Sarup Prabhu was also another person. This way there were many devotees who were not actually coming from that wild background of American youth. Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was an extremely brilliant person from the very beginning. A very brilliant personality, very focused, very committed to whatever he was doing. And when he became involved in Krishna consciousness movement, he was completely committed to it. And Prabhupada noticed it. In the early days, book distribution was the main mission. And various types of distribution strategies were being established. One was Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnujan Maharaj started the Radha Damodar Party. They had buses. They would take the bus, and they had this. They used to buy these second-hand Greyhound buses, huge 60-seater buses, and they would do up these buses, turn the bus into a temple. They would have the deities in the bus, and the devotees would live in the bus, and they would travel, go to the universities, and they would preach and recruit devotees. Very, very successful. They had many buses, many such buses, and the Radha Damodar Party was a very powerful preaching wing of ISKCON at that time. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnujan Maharaj were such powerful personalities, such powerful preachers, that it is said that devotees used to say that they would bring in the students to meet Tamal Krishna Maharaj in the bus. So they would come in to the bus through one door, and they would come, when they would come out of the other door of the bus, they turned into devotees. I mean, that's how powerfully this movement, how effectively the movement was spreading at that time. Another such wing actually was, which was headed by Satsurup Maharaj, was the Library Party. And this Library Party the teams of devotees used to go to different countries and they would sell the entire set. Those days the sets were not out, but they would make them sign a contract. The libraries, where they naturally keep books, they would get them to sign the contract. As the books come out, they would immediately buy the books. Like, they used to call that standing order. They used to sign up standing orders. Whatever books they had, they would give those books. But those days, all the books were not out. So, the agreement was that as the books would come out, they would be sent, they would be shipped to them, and they would buy them. And this one wing of this library party, in a very adventurous way, ventured into the communist countries. Their feeling was, why shouldn't we go behind the Iron Curtain and distribute Prabhupada's books there also? It was not easy. Like, library parties were very successful in Western Europe, even in India. Like, they would travel in India and sign up 5-6, each devotee would sign up 5-6 orders every day. But that was not the case in the Eastern Europe. Those days it was not Eastern Europe, those days it was actually the communist Europe. And Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was one of the devotees who went to the Eastern Europe to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. And it was an extremely risky job, because if he was caught, then he would be treated as an American spy. And you know what is the punishment they would give him. Like, it would be either life imprisonment or it could even be death sentence. Spying in Eastern Europe was considered to be the most heinous crime. But he risked his life and went there. And he used to write to Srila Prabhupada in 1976, when Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. And Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, he actually went to Vrindavan to leave his body. And Bhaktitirtha Maharaj used to write to him about his extremely exciting adventures in preaching, while preaching in Eastern Europe. And Prabhupada used to eagerly wait for Bhaktitirtha Maharaj's letters. And when the letters would come, Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to read the letters out to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada used to take his lunch. Prabhupada hardly used to eat anything those days. But still he would just try to eat something, and then he would sit there. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to come with the letters that different devotees wrote to him from different parts of the world. And he used to read them out. And I used to see, when Bhaktitirtha Maharaj's letters came, Tamal Krishna Maharaj would read that out to Srila Prabhupada first. And Prabhupada would be so pleased to hear. And I remember one day such letter was, Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was describing, I don't know which country it was, that he felt that he was being chased. He was in an university, and he felt that some people were just chasing him. So he started to run, and he walked into the university office area, And he just opened one door and just rushed in and closed the door behind. And the professor, it was the office of somebody, someone professor, and he just, he was surprised to see him, and Bhaktivedanta Maharaj just told him that he came to meet him. He came all the way from America to meet him because he had an appointment to meet with him. And the man was very, very polite, very courteous. He said, okay, so please sit down. And they started to talk. And then he sold a standing order to that person. And he went, and this way, not only he escaped from the KGB or whatever it's called there, but he just sold a set of books of Srila Prabhupada to this person. I mean, he made him accept this set of books for his faculty. And in this way, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj used to point out that how Krishna was actually helping him all the time, like in all kinds of extremely difficult situation, it would become so favorable, so conducive to his book distribution mission. And so and in this way Prabhupada, I could see how what a deep appreciation Srila Prabhupada had for Bhaktivedanta Maharaj. And this appreciation was for his wonderful service attitude. Srila Prabhupada gave recognition not for no rhyme or reason. Srila Prabhupada didn't give recognition out of sentiment or out of any such external reason. Srila Prabhupada gave recognition to those who were committed to serving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. He could see. And from their actions, Prabhupada recognized how wonderful service attitude these individuals had. And Prabhupada inspired them. And Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was one such person. Later on, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj revealed that Prabhupada went to London from Vrindavan. Prabhupada came to Vrindavan to give up his, to leave his body. But then the devotees appealed to Srila Prabhupada not to leave. Then Prabhupada decided to stay on. And Prabhupada's health condition started to improve. And then when his health condition improved, he wanted to go out to preach. And so he went to London from Vrindavan. That was the last time that Srila Prabhupada went out of India. Srila Prabhupada's health condition was extremely frail. But still Prabhupada went out. And Prabhupada's plan was not only to go to London. Actually, London was the first stop. The next stop would have been New York. From New York to Gitanagari. From Gitanagari to Los Angeles. Then Los Angeles to Hawaii. And Prabhupada wanted to be in Hawaii and translate there. So, but Prabhupada's health condition deteriorated considerably when he was in London, and Srila Prabhupada went back to India. So when Prabhupada went to London, most of the devotees, most of the disciples of Srila Prabhupada most of the disciples of Srila Prabhupada at that time came to see him from Europe. All over, from all over Europe, the disciples came to see Srila Prabhupada in London. And Bhaktivedanta Maharaj also came to see Srila Prabhupada. And Bhaktivedanta Maharaj mentioned that when Prabhupada heard that Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was there, he called him. He asked him to come close to him. And then Prabhupada embraced him. And Prabhupada said, your life has been successful. And indeed, we can see that how his life has been successful. He is undoubtedly one of the most powerful, most effective preachers in our movement. I mean, he is the one who could preach to the most exalted personalities, most prominent and eminent personalities in the world, and create a deep impression. Like, I remember here in South Africa, whenever I met Buthelezi, he would ask how Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was. In London, there is an MP called Frank Ward. One day he was telling me, it was soon after South Africa's independence. That was 94. So Bhaktivedanta Maharaj also came here during that independence celebration. And Frank Ward also was there. And Bhaktivedanta Maharaj's speech, I mean, he was so impressed. He told me that, I mean, it's one of the most brilliant speech he ever heard. Recently I was in Mauritius and I was told that the previous Prime Minister of Mauritius, Jagannath, who is the President now, he was not so favorable to Krishna consciousness. But when Bhaktivedanta Maharaj went there, he agreed to meet him. He agreed to meet him. And when he met with Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, he was extremely impressed. He was very, very impressed. And this is the kind of impression that he left with people. And these are the few that I got to know. But there must be hundreds such people who had been affected by his purity and by his conviction to Krishna consciousness. He came to South Africa, gave seminars to the most high-ranking government officials. I remember 2 years back when he came, he gave a seminar to the generals of the South African army, and made such deep impression on people. And he was extremely, extremely brilliant, and he was extremely enthusiastic. I didn't know how he used to manage. Like, he would go, and in a day he would meet 10 different people, not only just ordinary people, he would meet 10 very, very high-ranking political leaders or leaders of the society. And from morning till night, practically, he was just working. And I didn't know how he could get so much energy. I used to get amazed when I used to see him dance in the, especially in Rath Jatras. He would dance for hours and hours, and he would be completely drenched. In America, the Rath Jatra takes place in summer. Some cities in America in summer can get a little hot. And he would dance in such a way, beating his drum, and he would be completely drenched. And he would go on for hours together. And so much energy, so much vitality he had. Last year, he was in Detroit during the Rath Jatra. And in the Rath Jatra, he attended the Rath Jatra, and he developed some sort of pain in his foot. And he actually had a lump in his left foot. 10 years back, he got it checked. And the doctor, after checking, reported that it was benign, it was harmless. And he developed this pain and he went to a doctor. And the doctor detected quite a few complications. And one complication was melanoma cancer. That's also another unusual thing, that melanoma cancer is not really that serious. Melanoma cancer is a cancer what they call skin cancer. And often people get it due to too much exposure to sun. Those who bask in the sun on the beach for too long, especially the white skin individuals, and they get this melanoma cancer. It's not that harmful. And generally, individuals with darker skins are not prone to melanoma. But they detected that Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj developed melanoma cancer. And not only that, he had diabetes, very high level of diabetes. And so immediately Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj went back to Washington, because Washington was his base and he has quite a few doctor disciples there, so he decided to give the treatment. And when they started to check up, they found that the cancer spread more than 80%, and that was bad enough. That's really critical. And many things were tried, many special treatments, many special kind of cures were tried upon, but it didn't work. Then about 3.5 months ago, it was decided that to check the spreading of the cancer, that they have to amputate his leg, left leg. So the amputation took place, but the growth couldn't be stopped. It already spread, and it not only spread, I mean, it affected many of his very important organs of his body. Even his bones have been affected by the cancer, so much so that when about a month, maybe a little more than a month ago, about a month and a half ago, or 2 months ago, when he was lying on his bed, he tried to turn and he heard a sound. That's some sort of a sound. And it was actually his collarbone snapped. The bone became so much fragile, so corroded inside, that became so brittle that just a little pressure caused it to break. It must be excruciatingly painful. And previously, prior to that, he was trying to walk on the crutch, with the help of the crutch, but after that happened, he couldn't even use the crutch. And he was, after the amputation, hope was, the expectation was that probably with prosthetics, with an artificial leg, he would be able to walk and he would even be able to dance. And actually, during his Vyas Puja, about 2 months ago, he got up and he led the kirtan for half an hour, he was kind of dancing. But after that, that movement also was not possible. So now his condition is very, very delicate. He can't move. They have to carry him in a wheelchair. Even when he has to go to the bathroom. They have to be, he has to be carried in the wheelchair from his, because he can't use the crutch, or he cannot be even propped properly, like he has to be pushed in a wheelchair. And it's very painful actually to see his condition now. Recently I met him. I went to Gita Nagari, where he is now in Pennsylvania. I spent a couple of days with him, and anyway, I'll just read out what I wrote about that meeting with Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. Probably that will be more precise. After my meeting with him, I posted it in the GBC conference for the other GBCs. I went there on the 11th of April, and on 12th April in the morning, early morning, I was just writing about this meeting with Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. I came to Gita Nagari yesterday to see Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. Since I got to know about his critical health condition about 4 months ago, I had been planning to visit him. However, when I arranged to go to him, I was informed that he was going for an operation and then to the rehabilitation center. And then I became busy with the GBC meeting. Finally, I managed to come to America and get to see him. I knew that this meeting with him would be extremely uplifting spiritually. But I did not have the slightest idea of how wonderful it would really be. In spite of his loss of weight, he looks the same, maybe even more beautiful, more serene, due to his profound spiritual advancement and unfathomable inner tranquility. When his face lights up with his usual radiant smile, you get a flash of realization that he totally transcended his bodily platform and became perfectly situated in his spiritual identity. He reached the destination that is the ultimate goal of life, that we all are struggling to reach in some lifetime. Our first session lasted for about 1.5 hours, and most of the time he was talking. When I came, I did not know what to expect. Recently, I stopped phoning him or even sending emails to him, thinking that he should not be made to strain. However, when I met him, Jai Shri Shri Radha Radhanath Srivan Mahaprabhu. However, when I met him, I was amazed to see that in spite of all his physical difficulties, he is still so vibrant with his vitality and enthusiasm. He reminded me of Srila Prabhupada during his last days, absolutely transcendental to this material nature and totally unaffected. And totally unaffected to his physical condition. He has indeed become the perfect son of the perfect father. Had his leg not have been amputated and his body not have reduced to even less than half of what he used to be, one could have been very easily made to think that there is nothing wrong with him. The reality is that he probably has just a few more weeks to be with us. His doctor actually mentioned that he should have left his body by now. It was a wonderful experience to have to, it was an extremely wonderful experience to hear him talk about his realizations. He did not just speak, he poured his heart out, and I felt myself extremely fortunate to receive that abundant flow of nectar. He spoke extensively about his involvement in ISKCON and his relationship with various devotees. Many experiences had been sources of inspiration and ecstasy, and some others of misunderstanding and pain. There had been conflicts and clashes. Some of them led to some passionate encounters, and he had reacted quite heavily. But now he can see that it is due to their concern for the welfare of the movement that they acted in that way. Now he can appreciate that everyone's intentions were sincere and honest. Now he does not bear any grudge or grievance against anyone. Now there is nothing but good wishes, appreciation, and love for everyone, especially for those with whom he had been so wonderfully related with the bond of Krishna consciousness by the divine arrangement of Srila Prabhupada. When he was speaking, I could feel the profound tranquility that was prevailing in his heart. I looked at him with spontaneous admiration and became aware once again how beautiful he looked. I could clearly perceive that this beauty was not produced out of skin and bones. It was a different kind of beauty that radiates due to his inner tranquility caused by profound spiritual realizations. I could get a glimpse of his spiritual advancement and felt a deep satisfaction that somehow I had been related to such a great devotee of Krishna. I felt an urge to embrace him, but then remembered that I should not do that because he fractured his collarbone and it would hurt him. He spoke about the futility of our plans and the inconceivable nature of Krishna's arrangements. Last summer, he was all set for his world tour, 35 seminars in the major cities of the world, scores of appointments with the heads of states and high-ranking government officials, TV talk shows and interviews on so many prominent TV channels. Then all of a sudden, just one medical test shattered them all. Now, the eventful life of John Favors, Ghanashyam Das Brahmachari, Bhakti Tirtha Swami, Swami Krishnapad is coming to an end. A very wonderful journey through one body in this planet is about to finish. He was happy that soon all the sufferings and pain would be over. He has a profound conviction that wherever Srila Prabhupada would take me would be the most wonderful place to be in. He reflected and revealed to me that even when he was just a new devotee, he used to write in his diary as if each day was his last day, and he used to pray to Krishna that he could take full advantage of that day and be prepared to leave his body whenever the time came. I begged his forgiveness for all the offenses I have committed to him, consciously and unconsciously. He smiled and said, "You can never commit any offense. You have always been so nice to me. Whenever I went to Mayapur, you made such nice arrangements for me. You made me stay in your own room and took care of me so nicely." It was embarrassing to hear him speak like that. Trying to change the subject, I asked him whether he has any instruction for me. He told, "People trust you. Wherever you go, many people develop their faith in you. Our movement needs this. People have to have faith in our leaders. They have to trust us. Please continue to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission in this way." He paused for a while and then spoke, "Please take care of my disciples. They will need your guidance and care." My voice choked and I had difficulty restraining my tears. I held his hand and said, "Please bless me that I can properly execute that responsibility and never ever fail them." He reminded us so often about the need of love in our dealings with each other. It is out of his genuine concern for the downtrodden and deprived in our movement that he always stood by their side and spoke so boldly on their behalf. He generated so much faith and confidence in the hearts of so many. He was the visionary of our movement, and he pioneered the preaching on so many different fronts. People around the world who are outstanding in their respective spheres recognized his greatness, appreciated him for his spiritual qualities, and admired him for his achievement when they got to know him. One such person is Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi, the president of the Inkatha Freedom Party of South Africa and the head of the Zulu tribe. He had always been so full of admiration for him. Another such person is Mr. Frank Ward, a member of parliament from England. After hearing his speech in South Africa during its independence celebration, he described him as one of the most brilliant persons he ever met. He is undoubtedly one of the most brilliant sons of Srila Prabhupada. His commitment to his mission had been exemplary and his achievements exceptional. He preached to the heads of states, to very high-ranking political leaders, to the generals. The list can go on and on. Of course, there is no doubt that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement will go on by his divine mercy and inconceivable arrangement. However, at times one cannot help but wonder, what is his plan? Why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is taking such a powerful leader of our movement away when his input is so important for effectively spreading the Krishna consciousness movement throughout the world? This planet will indeed suffer an irreparable loss and will become bereft of one of our most brilliant leaders. Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj Ki. It was a very, very painful, to see him in that condition, especially when you remember him being so, who was so vibrant, so full of life, so full of vitality, so full of enthusiasm. But although he is stationary, but his spirit hasn't been affected at all. He's extremely vibrant. And we can see that he is not at all affected by his physical condition. Someone, Prahladanandi, just brought this book, The Spiritual Warrior. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj used to write, he writes this book. And actually he is still writing. I think the sixth volume, or the fifth volume, is about to come out. And there are three other books are coming out. And he mentioned that his books are being translated in 35 different languages now. And So I just got this note saying, in honor of Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami, please promote this book, Spiritual Warrior 4. Oh, so this is the last volume. The Spiritual Warrior 5 is about to come out. In his Spiritual Warrior 4, in his honor. It is Bhakti Tirtha Swami's latest book that has just been released. Normal price, 100 rand. And today it is being offered for 75 rands. So I will request everyone, please take a copy. Or rather, every family, please take a copy. And this is my earnest request. Please. Thank you. And where do we get these books? Can I distribute them?
Yes.
I would like to distribute. Okay. So those who want to take this book, please come forward. Or should I send these books out to you and hand them over to you? You can pay. If not now, you can pay later. Okay. Very good. So we can have a little kirtan, and somebody can chant a soft kirtan. This tune is becoming very popular. I don't know whether you know the history of this tune. In England, there is a girl called Gaurangi. Her father used to be a very famous singer. His name is now Jayadev Prabhu. He is a disciple of Sri Ram Maharaj. And Gaurangi's tune, Gaurangi actually introduced this tune. I hope you understand which tune I'm talking about. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama, Rama, Hare Hare.